There are supply chains going through Thailand that specialize in pangolins, the scaly anteater. We've got tiger skins and bones in particular. We've got other big cats, leopards. We've got lion carcasses being trafficked over from southern Africa. We have wild birds being shipped in all the way from Brazil. Some of these animals might carry pathogens for which we have no immune response. We have to remember COVID-19, HIV, all these other pandemics before, they were sparked by transmission of viruses from animals to people.
Thailand is a hub for an illegal trade that's fueling history's worst mass extinction and threatening the survival of humans. Let's take a deeper dive into the global impact of wildlife trafficking. I'm Dave Kendall. I'm a senior reporter and producer with the Bangkok Post, and I've been based in Thailand since 2005. On Deeper Dive, I take you beneath the surface of the big issues here in Thailand. Please share and follow this podcast, and you can watch the video version on Spotify. On the previous episode, we looked at wildlife trafficking in Thailand and met two of the police officers responsible for stopping it. Today, we're going to look at the bigger picture. According to the United Nations, 1 million animal and plant species are now threatened with extinction. More than 40% of amphibian species and more than a third of all marine mammals. Why is that happening? Well, part of the reason is that we've already turned literally half the habitable part of our planet into a farm, with three quarters of that farmland dedicated to animal agriculture. The supply is just 18% of global calories and causes massive air, land, and ocean pollution. So, there just isn't that much wild land left for wildlife. What is still wild is also exploited, not this time by animal farmers, but by poachers and traffickers. And that's the issue on this pod. I think pretty much all of us agree that species loss is a shame and that hunting and trafficking protecting wildlife is bad. But is it really such a big issue compared to climate change and the risk of pandemics? Well, there's a connection. It's not just a matter of saying, oh, it's sad there aren't so many kinds of animals and plants left, and let's pity the poor pangolins stuffed into crates on ships and in pickup trucks. Wild animals carry viruses that humans and domesticated animals can't cope with. And once they jump across from one species to another, like HIV, bird flu, SARS, and quite likely COVID-19 did, well, in the worst case scenario, we're finished as a species. To help us take a deeper dive into all this, my guest today is Steve Galster, founder and CEO of the global NGO Freeland. Steve, thanks so much for joining us here on Deeper Dive Thailand. Wildlife trafficking is a $20 billion industry, and we're witnessing the fastest species loss in history. What does Freeland do to combat that?
Well, Freeland's a counter-trafficking organization, and we set up training and investigation support for enforcement, and we try to get the public to stop buying these wild animals.
Your 2019 report identified Thailand as a hub for wildlife trafficking. Why is that?
Thailand has historically been a hub for wildlife trafficking, both legal and illegal trade. It's got a better infrastructure than other countries in the region, so it can get product from source to market, from Africa, from Indonesia to China. So it's just historically placed with a lot of businessmen based in Bangkok in particular, who know the supply chain and have set them up over decades.
And that supply chain, give me a typical example of one of those supply chains.
Sure. For example, there are supply chains going through Thailand that specialize in pangolins, the scaly anteater, the most heavily trafficked mammal in the world. Traditionally, they would have gotten those 3 decades from Thailand itself, a couple neighboring countries like Malaysia and Cambodia. they have been vacuumed up at such a high rate that those supply chains now extend over into Africa and other areas. And so they will gather the animals, alive or dead, transship them through Thailand to the main destination, which will be China. And they'll do that either through Laos in Vietnam or circuitously through Cambodia.
Okay. And some of them are coming from Indonesia and Malaysia, or are they mainly coming from Africa now?
It's a mix from Indonesia and Malaysia and Africa, but very few, if any, are coming actually from within the lower Mekong, which is where they were coming from before.
Okay, so the pangolin is coming across the border, say, from Myanmar or from Malaysia, and then how is it being trafficked through Thailand?
So the pangolins are being usually trucked over the border, hidden in other cargo, usually from Malaysia, but they're also coming in by boat now from Indonesia, sometimes from Malaysia, and increasingly all the way from southern and eastern Africa, and even from Nigeria. So, and these will be in the form of mainly dead animals or already broken down into the scales. The big demand for pangolins is really their scales.
And that demand is mainly in China?
Yeah, the demand, person for person, dollar for dollar, is coming from mainland China. But there's quite a demand for pangolin meat and scales also in some other countries, particularly in Vietnam. We're finding it in demand in Laos, parts of Thailand as well, Cambodia, Myanmar.
And why are the scales, what are they used for? Why are they so valuable?
The scales are like a precursor in traditional Chinese medicine, an activator. So you'll add pangolin scales, you'll grind it up and add it to all kinds of other traditional Chinese medicines to supposedly make them more potent, to activate them.
That's pangolins. What else is being smuggled?
Oh, the list is really long, Dave. So we've got elephant tusks. We've got turtles, live and dead. We've got tiger skins and bones in particular. We've got other big cats, leopards. We've got lion carcasses being trafficked over from southern Africa. We have wild birds being shipped in all the way from Brazil and other places. I mean, it just depends on what you want. The menu list is very long.
Over the past few years, what's changed in terms of the animals being trafficked and the volume?
What has changed is that enforcement has definitely gone up. Awareness and interest by governments in this region has gone up. And awareness by the target audience, the consumers, has also increased. What that has resulted in is the following. You've got a lot of people still determined to consume and trade. They're not being impacted by the awareness campaigns that us NGOs are doing. They're sticking to their guns. And because of the increased enforcement, traders are teaming up with organized crime to move their product across borders because now it's harder. And like what we saw decades ago in the drug trade in South America, for example, cocaine traders would turn to people like a Pablo Escobar to move the product because he was a professional smuggler. And when he saw how much money was being made from the cocaine trade, he just pushed those cocaine traders aside and took over himself. We've seen the same thing in Southeast Asia, where professional smugglers were moving drugs and people and marijuana and all kinds of stuff across borders. Being contracted to move rhino horn, pangolins, et cetera. And when they saw how much money was being involved and that the return on investment was high and the risk of getting caught was low, they just muscled in and started taking over the trade. And that's what we're looking at now, is a lot more organized crime.
Okay, so the increased enforcement has actually led to the professionalization of wildlife smuggling. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. Now, That's not all bad. I'll just add, because we have seen volumes go down and the targets for law enforcement are more narrow. They know who they're going after. And some of those crooks happen to be involved in other forms of crime. So law enforcement agencies are increasingly interested in these targets for lots of reasons. So now the battle is getting more interesting.
Perhaps you can talk about one or two well-known traffickers who were arrested in Thailand over the past few years.
Sure. Well, there's one supply chain or syndicate that we call Hydra. And we call it Hydra because every time we thought we knew who the kingpin was or the queenpin, and they got arrested, another one would pop up. And so it seemed like this Hydra-headed monster. And what we discovered over 20 years of looking at this criminal gang is that it is family organized crime. It's a cluster of families who are linked through family lines and sometimes just business. And one particular person I'll mention, Bun Chai Bak, Vietnamese national, moved into Thailand, had his little ID card to operate out of Nakhon Phnom. He was leading a supply chain that was moving everything from rosewood to ivory, pangolins, tigers, rhino horn, et cetera, very effectively, bringing the product in through Thailand, up through that northeastern part of the country, and moving it across the Mekong into Laos, where they had other people in the syndicate take it from there, paper it so that it looked legal if anybody were to inspect it, and then would move it, usually by road, into Vietnam, where some of it would be offloaded and sold locally, and a lot more would be repackaged and shipped up to China. Bun Chai Bak was known to us since 2014-15. We worked with law enforcement authorities to try to catch him and his team, his colonels and other people. Very difficult. They're a tough target. Long story short, the anti-money laundering organization of Thailand, AMLO, moved in, worked with us, and started to identify their assets. And that's where we started picking up ground, where they were able to go in March 2021, after gathering a lot of evidence that, yes, these people were trafficking wildlife, and they seized their property. They seized their cars, their hotels, their land. They seized over $11 million worth of assets. To the point, they got so upset that that syndicate led by Bun Chai sued Freeland for helping in this effort. But the sad part of the story was that he went to court on a criminal case, and he was found not guilty. And then that was appealed, and he was found not guilty again. But the good story is that in September this last year, the prosecutor didn't stop. He kept appealing it, went all the way to the Thai Supreme Court, which looked at the evidence and all this anti-money laundering work too, and said, this guy's guilty. And they overturned the decision and threw the book at him for 5 years. But he remains at large. He's a fugitive right now.
Okay, so that was one fairly major victory, even if he's yet to see time behind bars. The new Thai Prime Minister has talked about the importance of seizing and confiscating assets from drug dealers. So I guess what you're saying is the same thing can be applied to the organized criminals behind wildlife smuggling.
That's correct. There is a predicate offense for environmental offenses now. So they can use the AMLO regulations to go after wildlife traffickers.
So aside from the enforcement angle, what are the most effective ways now to halt wildlife smuggling?
I think the number one way is to get people to stop buying. You know, if we kill the demand, traders won't be involved in this. However,
how do you do that most effectively?
Well, that's the billion dollar question, really. Nobody's done it very effectively at scale so far, but we have done it as a community to a smaller scale. We can learn from that. For example, with shark fin, there have been successful cases of campaigns getting people to stop eating shark fin soup. Singapore used to be the biggest hub for shark fin trading, along with Hong Kong in the region. You can't find shark fin on the menu in Singapore anymore. China, even the state party committee banned shark fin soup at party conventions. Huge move. So I think what it takes is two things. One, behavior change campaigns, explaining to people where this comes from, why it's bad. Secondly, getting the state on board right up to the prime ministerial levels and saying, hey, you know, we don't tolerate this anymore. Don't get caught doing it, not just trading it, but consuming it. And thirdly, reminding people that some of these animals might carry pathogens for which we have no immune response. We have to remember COVID-19, HIV, all these other pandemics before, they were sparked by transmission of viruses from animals to people.
So what you're saying is we might be looking at a new pandemic sparked by smuggled wildlife.
Definitely. I mean, scientists are now saying that what probably sparked COVID-19 was a virus transmitted from raccoon dogs, of all things, from a commercial market in that wet market of Wuhan. Now, those raccoon dogs would have been commercially traded. You can find raccoon dogs in Chatuchak Market today. So we should be concerned about all of this. And Thailand's not the only place that still has some of this trade. And a lot of this trade, it's legal. It's not just the illegal trade that's a threat. Legal trade can mask illegal trade and viruses. We should be very concerned about that.
If you had a wish list right now, what would you like to see change the most in the next 6 months?
Next 6 months, we'd love to see an enforcement network updated in the Southeast Asia region, something that we will be working on. We got a State Department grant. We'll be teaming up with the Thai government and other governments to do that. And if I can just add longer term, I really think we should just be going for a ban on commercial trade in wild animals. I think that there's a tiny percentage of people in the country of Thailand and the world who actually benefit from that trade. There's a whole lot of people and animals that risk bad things from that trade.
Steve Galster, CEO and founder of Freeland, thanks so much for joining us here on Deeper Dive.
Thanks, Dave.
What are the takeaways? Freeland founder Steve Galster says Thailand remains a hub for the global smuggling of animals and animal parts. Trafficking laws and enforcement have been ramped up, but that means traffickers are working more closely with organized crime. Authorities need to hit the traffickers in the pocket by confiscating assets and then use part of those assets to reward the law enforcement personnel who busted them. Galster points out that going after wildlife traffickers reduces other kinds of crime, like drugs and people trafficking, since it's sometimes the same networks. And it helps fight corruption, because a lot of trafficking depends on graft. Finally, he says, wherever you think COVID-19 came from, or even whether it existed, judging from many comments on BangkokPost.com, there's no doubt the next pandemic could cross from trafficked wildlife into other species and then into humans. The danger is real. What do you think about wildlife trafficking and the best way to stop it? What do you say to people who think they have a God-given right to hunt? Now, that's an interesting one, because for about 2 million years, that's how we got a lot of our protein. That all changed when we started to domesticate plants and animals 12,000 years ago, which is the blink of an eye compared to the millions of years humans spent as hunter-gatherers. So we're not biologically wired to farm, but you could argue evolution has wired us to hunt. The problem is, with the population explosion, we've now turned half the world into a farm, so there's far fewer areas left to hunt, and we need to preserve the small fraction of land that can still support wildlife. What do you think? Let me know in the comments, and please rate and review the podcast. It would be great if you can follow and share it too. I'm Dave Kendall. See you again soon for another deeper dive into the big issues here in Thailand and across the world.